somehow, I don't know, super souls got some things well organized. The sound system isn't one of them, but the topic that I was thinking to speak about was perfectly complemented by the kirtan. Vishnu Gada just took us to Vrindavan through names of Krishna as he's loved and adored and worshipped in Vrindavan. And then Govinda. So I thought I would share with you some of the sections of Srimad Bhagavatam I've been reading through consecutively. And there are four verses that are I'd like to cover today that lead right up to Uddhava speaking about Krishna in Vrindavan. So they're very nice. One of them is particularly a very famous verse spoken by Uddhava. And go do a little background. Go back to first canto Srimad Bhagavatam. In the 13th chapter is the chapter heading is Dhritarashtra quits home. And there's one verse in the very beginning of that chapter where it speaks of Vidura after being insulted by Duryodhana, he immediately left the palace and went on pilgrimage for a number of years. And when you calculate when Vidura came back to Hastinapur, from the time that he left, just before the Kurukshetra battle, and so many series of events that took place, it was around 34 years. It was a long pilgrimage. When we go on pilgrimage, some people say, oh, I went to Vrindavan, I was there for 2 days. Or a week. Or maybe a month. Or visit some holy places and spend a few months. One family I know just came back from India, 4 months. 4 months. A year. 2 years. 3 years. 5 years. 10 years. 34 years. After, one can only imagine, a personality of Vidura's caliber, he must have had some very transcendental experiences. So, at the beginning of the third canto, the first section, the sages of Naimisharanya, having heard that, way back in the first canto, they didn't space out. They just put it on reserve for another question to ask, oh, Sutta, please describe what happened while Vidura was on pilgrimage. And you said, also in the first canto, that he met Maitreya. And while hearing from Maitreya, he became perfectly satisfied in all transcendental subject matters. Those conversations between Vidura and Maitreya must have been really something. Can you tell us about those two things? The questions are also embedded with some other details. So in that first chapter of the third canto, it's three cantos worth of conversation. But it starts with describing Vidura's pilgrimage and describing Vidura's mood. Vidura wasn't at all feeling insulted. He was certainly insulted, but he wasn't feeling hurt. He was feeling relief that, well, disappointment in himself, that he was unable to move, especially his elder brother. Because in Mahabharata, he had tried again and again and again and again. He describes, in one place, he spent an entire night until the early morning, all night long, educating Dhritarashtra about the peril that he was bringing his whole dynasty into. He gave his, this is Yamaraj, in the form of Vidura, and Dhritarashtra wouldn't budge. So when the insult of Duryodhana came, And Vidura understood, I can't help this situation. Not only that, but just prior, Duryodhan, wanting to get Krishna, had left the assembly, arranged for all of his soldiers to pounce on Krishna upon his signal. And when they went to pounce on Krishna, Krishna smiled and showed his universal form right in the assembly. And everybody stood back. Krishna withdrew the universal form and exited. But he knew. Vidura was very wise. He knew Duryodhan's not going to just take it. Duryodhan's going to start a battle right here in the palace. And I'll have to fight. Although he was born of the Shudra assistant of Ambika, and thus was understood to be a Shudra himself by birth from his mother, he was under the care of the royal family. And so when he left, didn't say a word, he took his bow and arrows and placed them ceremoniously by the door, signifying, I don't have to make this decision that Bhishma has to make, fight on behalf of those who have been maintaining us. But how can I fight for these corrupt people? It was a very, very difficult decision that he didn't have to make. Krishna relieved him of that. So he left. And that spirit, specifically, Prabhupada describes in the third canto beginning, he wanted to purify himself from the contaminating association that he had been keeping and to qualify himself to be in Krishna's association, because Vidura is an intimate devotee. He could have just gone to Krishna, but he didn't just go to Krishna because he didn't feel himself qualified. Krishna held Vidura very dear because Vidura held Krishna very dear. Krishna stayed, instead of in the royal palace, he stayed at the home of Vidura and took his meal at the home of Vidura instead of with the royal family. But still he felt himself not qualified. Although he knew that Krishna was very kind, he wanted to purify himself. So he went on pilgrimage, and it describes the places and so many places he went on pilgrimage. One of them being Prabhas Kshetra. So because he went to Prabhas Kshetra, the place where the Yadu dynasty annihilated themselves, he knew already what happened. But when he went to, he was in traveling in the forest, and he found Uddhava, the advisor to Krishna. Uddhava so elevated that even Krishna would seek his advice. There's many nice examples of that. This is their transcendental rasa. Not that Krishna needs advice from anybody, but Krishna had that kind of affectionate, confidential relationship with Uddhava. So when Vidura saw Uddhava, it was almost like seeing Krishna. In fact, the bodily features of Uddhava so much resemble Krishna's that when Uddhava came with a message from Krishna, the gopis thought Krishna had come. They were very disappointed when they got up really close and it wasn't Krishna. Poor Uddhava. Oh, shucks, it's not Krishna. But of such a elevated stature that when Uddhava began asking, Vidura began asking Uddhava about how are Krishna and Balaram, how is Ugrasena, Mother Rohini, and naming the names of the personalities in Krishna's pastimes in Dwaraka, because Uddhava is principally associated with Krishna in Dwaraka. Uddhava couldn't speak, not just because of a mundane emotion, but such a transcendental emotion is described by Sutta Goswami that the mere mention of Krishna's name brought his concentration completely upon Krishna, and he was with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. He was feeling separation from Krishna so intensely that hearing Krishna's name carried him to Goloka Vrindavan. But here's Vidura wanting some service from him. So he struggled to come from that spiritual position to external consciousness in this world to do some service. He was exhibiting the symptoms of bhava, bhakti. His body was stunned, his hairs were standing on end, tears were streaming from his eyes. He was trying to stop the tears from his eyes, stop his body from trembling, tried to speak, his voice was choked. He couldn't. Eventually he gained composure, began to speak. Very moving scene. Imagine there. He has just had Krishna speak Uddhava Gita. Krishna has announced that he's going to leave. Krishna's gone. Uddhava's alone in the forest. And here comes Vidura asking about Krishna. His words are a kind of madness. He's speaking about himself and Vidura as being the most unfortunate, although they're the most fortunate. Everything's backwards. Those that left with Krishna because the Prabhas Kshetra fratricidal battle took them all, but they're with Krishna and we're here, separated from him. And he begins speaking in so many, it was a simple question, but he speaks for three chapters just in, absorbed in thought of Krishna. Speaking about Krishna's, not so much about the transcendental position of Krishna, but the apparent contradiction of Krishna's pastimes, which in one sense for a learned personality like Uddhava is something to relish. And he's able to relish it, but he's relishing it in an intensified way, in a great pain of separation. In the verses just leading up to the ones that I'm going to read right now, he uses four different words for pain. I'll see if I can find some of them. Yeah. Lord Krishna begged pardon from his parents for Krishna and Balaram's inability to serve their feet due to being away from home because of great fear of Kamsa. He said, "Oh mother, oh father, please excuse us for this inability. All this behavior of the Lord gives me pain at heart." Sounds pretty wonderful. Who, after smelling the dust of his lotus feet even once, could ever forget it? Simply by expanding the leaves of his eyebrows, Krishna has given the death blow to those who are burdening the earth. He who is so powerful that just by he is destroying all the demons that he came to appear. He didn't need weapons. He didn't need anything. He just raised. I mean, the poetry is beautiful. Expanded the leaves of his eyebrows. He destroyed all the demons. That person, appearing in the prison house of Kamsa, the unborn who was born, is afraid? Kamsa? And he hides incognito because he's afraid of Kamsa? And when he comes before Kamsa and destroys Kamsa, he who is the terror of the universe, he destroys Kamsa and then comes before his mother and father, begging their forgiveness because he was afraid to come back. Because Kamsa was there, and what might Kamsa do? Please forgive me. I couldn't help myself. I was afraid of Kamsa. He who just by smelling the dust, not even touching the dust, just smelling the dust from the lotus feet of Krishna, even once, can never forget it. It pains me, not its ecstasy. It pains me to think of his transcendental pastimes. Continuing, You have personally seen how the king of Chedi, Shishupal, achieved success in yoga practice, although he hated Lord Krishna. Even the actual yogis aspire after such success with great interest by performance of their various practices because of his contact with Shishupal. Shishupal achieved that which the yogis can't achieve. Who can tolerate separation from him? Certain others who were fighters on the battlefield of Kurukshetra were purified by the onslaught of Arjuna's arrows, and while seeing the lotus-like face of Krishna, so pleasing to the eyes, they achieved the abode of the Lord. This is our Krishna. The living entities have the option of their free will, proper use, misuse, even the misuse of their free will, even inimical, despising Krishna. Just by seeing his beautiful spiritual form, they were moved by that beauty so much, by that little attraction for Krishna, a little. The beauty, overwhelming beauty of Krishna. They achieved the spiritual world. That much bhakti. Oh, the rest of it was inimical. Lord Sri Krishna is the Lord of all kinds of... So this is beginning the verses that I want. That covers what I was reading before. Go back further, and he's expressing to Vidura again and again pain. He's feeling pain. So there's two types of his pain. I'll read something from the purport that explains one of those types. The pain is that ordinary people hear of these pastimes and they think Krishna is afraid. Krishna went and hid himself on the other side of the Jamuna River because he was afraid. He told his mother and father, I was afraid, so I stayed away. And ordinary people see that. They don't see the transcendental nature of Krishna's beauty, Krishna's power, Krishna's opulence, Krishna's the unborn that becomes born. And they think, oh, he's a human. He's one of us. He's maybe a good version of one of us, but he's one of us. It pains me that they deride Krishna or think of him in an ordinary way like that. It gives me great pain. Lord Sri Krishna is the Lord of all kinds of threes, Trayadisha. Prabhupada named one of his disciples, Trayadisha. The Lord of all kinds of threes. And is independently supreme by achievement of all kinds of fortune. He is worshipped by the eternal maintainers of the creation, who offer him the paraphernalia of worship by touching their millions of helmets to his feet. He's speaking of Anantashesh here, the millions of hoods that holds up, that supporters or maintainers, sustainers of the universe. Well, Anantashesh worships Krishna. The Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, the guna avatars, they all worship Krishna. The three internal, external, and marginal potencies all worship Krishna. The three modes of nature, they're all working under Krishna's direction. He's the Lord of them all. Therefore, O Vidura, does it not pain us, his servitors, when we remember that he, Lord Krishna, used to stand before King Ugrasena, who was sitting on the royal throne, and used to submit explanations before him, saying, Oh, my Lord, please let me know, please let me be known to you. This gives me great pain. For us. Wonderful. Krishna's bhaktavatsala. He derives happiness by placing his unalloyed devotee in a position superior to him. It's relishable. It's nectar. It's part of Krishna's sweetness and his excellence. Our acharyas describe this shows. This is an exhibition of Krishna's complete perfection. He's not only the majestic Lord. He's the best at everything. He's the best of lovers. He's the best of masters. He's the best of dependents. He's the best in all respects. But So one of the pains of Uddhava is a transcendental pain that worldly people don't understand it. And they came as an ordinary person. And great scholars who are also Mayaya Paritagyana, they write in that way. And ordinary people read those writings and take, oh, Krishna is a this and Krishna is a that. Because it springs from the envy that's within the heart. So not having a proper regard for Krishna, Krishna comes to our level and Krishna does this and Krishna does that, shows he's immoral or he's afraid or he's a coward or he's a thief or he's a this or he's a that. Without any understanding of the transcendental nature of who is Krishna. So that gives Uddhava great pain. For the transcendentally learned soul, it's painful. Now, in Prabhupada's commentary, he doesn't so much go there. He does a couple of times in the course of all this section. But one of the things that Prabhupada does instead is he contrasts the impersonalist that does not understand and Uddhava that does understand. Avajananti ma mudha manushim tanamashritam parampavam ajananto. Those who are unfortunate or mudhas, fools and rascals, but most unfortunate, they don't understand. They think he has assumed a form or go the whole way and Brahman becomes covered. And then that's what Krishna is. And it's offensive to even say it. But to speak of espouse it and teach it and adhere to it and regard Krishna in some mundane way. Very painful. But then the contrast is one who is on the caliber of Uddhava's position, he doesn't have that difficulty in understanding Krishna's position. He's relishing Krishna's position. He's exhibiting how much he understands Krishna's position. But it pains him that others don't. So this compassion is coming out in a very different way than, let's say, the compassion of Prahlad Maharaj, who it also pains him that the rascals, the fools of this world, are simply wasting their time needlessly. But his compassion is, I don't want to go back to the spiritual world without taking these fools and rascals with me. The compassion of a learned Vaishnav is not, I'm better, they're lesser. The compassion of a learned Vaishnav is, what can be done to rectify this situation, to give relief to that misunderstanding and therefore the loss of this great joy and happiness of transcendental life. The other kind of pain that he's experiencing is the pain of separation. And for him, that's even greater. He's likening those that returned, well, actually did it already, though the Yadu dynasty members that returned, they were more fortunate than us, Vidura. Because you also experienced Krishna's association. But we're here. And we're not with Krishna. Those that were destroyed, they went with Krishna. They're with Krishna. And we're here in separation. That Supreme Lord, I want his association, but we're separated from his association, and that gives my heart great pain. Alas, how shall I take shelter of one more merciful than he who has granted the position of mother to a she-demon? Utana. Although she was unfaithful and she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast. Very famous verse. Canto 3, chapter 2, text 23. Aho baki yam. He's addressing her as Baki, because her older brother was Baka. So she's Baki. And the two, Bakasura and Putana, they had a younger brother, Aghasura. What a family.
Anticipate the Hollywood movies by many, many centuries.
So he's going to appreciate what a wonderful master is Krishna. You cannot, there is no such thing as a more worshipable master. Just see, she came having no faith. We're trying to develop faith. She had no faith, and she had malice, but little desire. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes who Putana was in her previous life from Garga Samhita. You know who Putana was in her previous life? Yes. Yeah. Bali Maharaj's daughter. When Bhamana came into the presence of the Yajna arena of Bali Maharaj, Bali Maharaj's daughter saw this beautiful dwarf, golden, effulgent Brahmin, and thought, oh, how beautiful. I would like to have a son like him and feed him my breast milk, be his mother. But when Bali Maharaj, after surrendering everything, then placed his head as the third step and total surrender unto Vamana. What did Vamana do? You denied me my third step. You're to be punished. And he tied him up with ropes like a common, you know, terrible criminal. Seeing her brother in that situation, I want to. So she had those two mixed emotions. One, mother. Another, inimical. Hatred toward Krishna. So, in the next appearance of the Personality of Godhead as Lord Krishna, she took her birth in this Bhaka and Arista and Putana family. And when she entered into the maternity home where Krishna was, she saw this beautiful child and had a similar motherly affection. How beautiful. Shukadeva Goswami says she was like a razor-sharp sword in a silk sheath. But Krishna was like a pile of coals soon to burn that object that touched him. And so Krishna accepted that motherly service, and that, like the soldiers that were killed on the Kurukshetra battlefield, they saw Krishna and they appreciated Krishna's transcendental beauty, and as they left their body, they returned to the spiritual world. Just that little devotion. So Putana was also accepted, but she went out of her way. Krishna's not an adult fighting on a battlefield. He's a several day old child, tiny child, empty to kill, you know. Even sensibilities today says that's horrible, what to speak of in Vedic time. But Krishna overlooked, gave her the position of a maid servant. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur indicates there are two principal maid servants of Mother Yashoda, Malika and Ambika, and she became an assistant of those two. Very confidential. Who could find a better master than Krishna? In Prabhupada's purport, he writes, "The Lord accepts the least qualification of a living entity and awards him the highest reward. That is the standard of his character." I'll read it again. Two sentences. "The Lord accepts the least qualification of the living entity and awards the highest reward. That is the standard of his character. Who can find a better master? In the fifth canto, in the prayers by the residents of Jambudvip, there's some indication like this also, that Krishna, amongst all the worshipable forms, he is most merciful, because when persons approach him for something material, he doesn't give it. But if he does, he does it in such a way, they will never come forward with that material desire again, because instead, he gives them his two lotus feet. And by placing his two lotus feet upon their heads, they're freed from all disturbance. No more will they have such desire, like Dhruva Maharaj. He's therefore the most worshipable person. And text 24, I consider, this is Uddhava, and he's very learned. Listen to what he says. I consider the demons who are inimical to the Lord to be more than the devotees. Because while fighting with the Lord, absorbed in thoughts of enmity, they are able to see the Lord. Carried on the shoulder of Garuda, the son of Tarksha or Kashyapa, and carrying the wheel weapon in his hand, he's intense. He wants to see Krishna. And so he has this qualification, that qualification. What's the use of all those qualifications if I can't see Krishna? They're more fortunate. Enmity, hatred, faithlessness. But they saw Krishna. They saw Krishna. I want to see Krishna. And I can't see Krishna because he's gone. The most unfortunate persons in all of creation. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary, says it a little differently. He says, they're devotees too. There's devotees, and then there's these non-devotees that see Krishna on the battlefield because they're in direct contact with Krishna, and again, they're attracted by his beauty. Their fortune even surpasses the devotees, is what Uddhava is saying. Now, that's not commonly what Prabhupada is teaching us. We should become Krishna conscious like Kamsa, where we're conscious of Krishna in an inimical mood, and we stay fixed in an inimical mood. But it's his transcendental emotion of wishing to be in Krishna's presence and seeing Krishna. Just like earlier, when from the first canto Bhagavatam, when Krishna was returning back to Dwarka, the battle of Kurukshetra is over, Yudhisthira is installed on the throne, everything's very nice, Krishna is now ready to return back to Dwarka. And there are multiple attempts to detain Krishna. Kunti's, Uttara, Yudhisthira is a little successful. Krishna stays a while longer, and Krishna leaves. And when Krishna leaves, Arjuna is sent with Krishna. It's appropriate when a member of the royal family accompanies Krishna ceremoniously back to Dwarka, but there's a transcendental reason. They understood intuitively what no one wanted to say. Krishna, his purposes for his appearance are now accomplished. Krishna is going to leave. So they sent him to find out what's Krishna's plan. And he was gone for too long. And all these terrible omens indicating a horrible thing has happened, but we don't want to say what that horrible thing is. Krishna left. So when Arjuna returns and he looks terrible, Arjuna, what's wrong? Is it this? Is it this? Is it this? Is it this? All good guesses except the obvious. Krishna's gone. When Arjuna blurts it out, Krishna's gone. His pain is so intense He can hardly speak, much like Uddhava. He can hardly speak. But by speaking and speaking and speaking and speaking and speaking about Krishna, particularly remembering Krishna's instructions to him on the Kurukshetra battlefield, he then feels Krishna's presence, although Krishna has left. Then he realized Krishna prepared him for that. So we're not on the platform of Uddhava, far from it. We're not on the platform of Arjuna, far from it. But the same principle of satatam kirtayanto mam, speaking about Krishna, hearing Srinvata Sukata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana, by engaging in the activities of kirtan and hearing the message of Srimad Bhagavatam regularly, especially over some extended periods of time, pour your heart into and receive the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, and that attraction for Krishna and the feeling of the presence of Krishna comes about. That's what's intended. All of the Srimad Bhagavatam is there as the presence of Krishna in this age of Kali, along with his holy name. When Krishna disappeared, shortly thereafter, the rising moon, as blazing as the sun, appeared. Form of Srimad Bhagavatam, to give Krishna's association in a literary form. And how Uddhava is churning these topics, appreciating what a master. We all have to have a master. We all do, although we may deny it. We're constitutionally servants, and we have a master, and pick one. Like Prabhupada, when he was speaking to Professor Katovsky, we accept Krishna, you accept Karl Marx. You have to have a master. So we choose Krishna. And when we choose Krishna, there's reason behind it. He's the best master. And we may not have that same capacity to understand how good a master Krishna is, how super excellent a master Krishna is. But by hearing from the Srimad Bhagavatam, particularly hearing from the savant, Uddhava, we can get some attraction, further attraction for taking shelter of Krishna. Oh, I had no idea that Vindrasarupa Prabhu would be here also, so I think I should...
Hey, go ahead, I'm having a great time. You have more to say, I want to hear.
I think my mind... When I saw you coming, I thought, wow, this is wonderful. I can hear some of these same topics spoken by you or whatever you want. So, I was particularly inspired also Jai Radhe, Jaya Krishna, Jai Vrindavan. Because I snuck ahead a little bit, and Uddhava's appreciation of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. What follows from this series of verses is Uddhava, it's like Krishna Stavamala. It's like a summary in capsule form of Uddhava's ecstasies of Krishna's pastimes, starting from the unborn taking birth in the prison house of Kamsa. And he's taking his audience, in this case it's Vidura, but also us, step by step, his expressions of ecstasy to soothe his feelings of separation from Krishna, and goes through into Dwarka, the whole summary of Krishna's, little mini summary of Krishna's pastimes. Maybe you can speak about this, your study of Sanatan Goswami's. You were sharing with me, we were spending some time reading Krishna Lila Stava, is that the title of it?
Mm-hmm.
This is Uddhava's in the Bhagavatam, and that's Sanatan Goswami's doing the same, but just ecstasy after burst of ecstasy after, and each of these, when you read Bhagavatam attentively, it's stimulating spiritual emotion, stimulating attraction for Krishna. Not just information processing, that's boring. We do enough of that already. receiving the ecstatic mood of great relishers of love of Godhead and how they're appreciating Krishna. Of course, we can't enter into their heart, but they're fully, but they're exposing their deep feelings. In Uddhava's case, particularly prominent is pain. Sanatana Goswami knows that emotion too, transcendental pain. He says in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita that most of our acharyas, they don't like to speak about the pastime of Krishna's leaving Vrindavan, because when worldly people hear about the pain of the residents of Vrindavan in separation from Krishna, they want to stay away from this Krishna thing, because they don't want to get to expose themselves to that potential pain. So they don't, you know, forget Krishna. I don't want pain. Although he says it's true, he then speaks this whole long exposition on Krishna's leaving Vrindavan. And it's ecstatic. How amazing is that pastime? How Krishna's turning the emotions of the residents of Vrindavan. And those persons that are narrating, and the authors themselves, they're also relishing. This is how Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to be, or topics of Krishna are meant to be enjoyed by sharing and discussing with one another. It's nice to go and read. It's nicer to share and discuss. Having some discussion with Ravindra Sruprabhu that has some idea, didn't get further than the idea of sometime this summer with certain devotees getting together and just enjoying the topics of Krishna together. Just do that. Not issues and stuff.
Right.
Just topics of Krishna together.
Question. What kind of liberation did the temporary or spiritual died in front of Krishna?
Do you know any particulars about Duryodhana?
I only know, not particularly about Duryodhana, but I know what, I can read to you what Prabhupada writes about those who died in the Kurukshetra battle.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Specifically, they achieved the spiritual world, not merging, not sayuja, the abode of the Lord, because they were appreciating this opulence of Krishna's beauty while they left their body. Anything else?
Yes. That question is actually directed to Ravindra Sruprabhu.
Okay.
It's a technical question. You said like
Putna,
when she was liberated, she got the form of Yashoda's servant.
Servant of her servants,
yeah,
right.
Servant of the servant. But so that's after the pastime that happened in Vrindavan. What was her form originally before when she descended to this world? So is the swarup same always, or you know, when you go back you can change the swarup?
She's a special case. I really don't know about her. When Krishna killed her, she revealed her original form with 12 miles and was, you know, huge, monstrous, like, a thing. When she came to kill Krishna, she looked just like a devotee. You know, where's somebody coming to Krishna, you know. She's one of these toxic mothers. read or hear about but she's a special case because she's eternally a devotee of Krishna. She goes through those pastimes. I don't know how far back you can trace. It's always been what she does.
Well, in generally speaking, so if a soul has a soul in the spiritual world, then it falls down to the material world.
Yeah, that was always, sir. You don't change your basic feeling for Krishna. Prabhupada explained that every jiva has some form of rati for Krishna that's really not changeable. And the process of devotional service just gets rid of all the garbage so it can be expressed. So she appears to be envious of Krishna. So this way she decides this way she's going to murder him. But it's actually incompatible with her actual her rati for Krishna in parental, maternal love. Yeah.
I have actually 3 questions.
3? Want to ask Maharaj?
Yeah, maybe yes.
Okay.
I want to thank you both for the wonderful explanation about Krishna's pastime. And especially I want to thank Maharaj for bringing it back from the feelings of Uddhava, and then in correlation with the feelings of Arjuna after Krishna left the spiritual world. This is a very always, you know, I feel it's a mix. Is it a mixed feeling? One is Krishna is absolute. Krishna is absolute, is present in his pastimes in the holy name. So, even though Uddhava, before Krishna left, he approached Krishna, oh please take me. Then Krishna instructed, okay, you go to the pilgrimage. Then still Uddhava is, I'm not sure if Uddhava is, as you say, transcendental pain. He said transcendental pain. So Uddhava is still are looking for his personal association. Whereas Arjuna, by remembering Krishna's pastime, he got pacified. So, and whereas the gopis in the Vrindavan, they were, Radharani's mood was like she was about to leave her body in separation from Krishna. So what it brings is, when we are in the, you know, in separation, the mode of separation, you know, the devotee feel, you know, he miss Krishna a lot. Then again, when he hears Krishna katha, then he feels Krishna's presence. So what is that mode? You know, I'm a little confused. Is it mixed mode we have devotees feel, or should we continue our life? One should continue satisfied with that what Krishna wants, whatever he wants. We do, or should we hanker for his personal association?
They're not contradictory.
That's right. Yeah.
In transcendental life, they're not contradictory. In our life, they are. It's either or, not both. In transcendental life, it's not contradictory. In one sense, the pain of separation is satisfied by remembrance. But that remembrance increases one's pain of separation. Like when Krishna left, what did the gopis do? They went mad. And to put some ointment or some balm on their madness, they started enacting Krishna's pastimes, which soothed that feeling of separation. But it also increased their remembrance of Krishna, which increased their pain of separation. So we can say, Uddhava was like that. Uddhava was also feeling some relief from the pain of separation by his recalling and remembering Krishna. But that also intensified his feelings of attachment for Krishna, which amplified his feelings of separation. It's materially speaking, it's a contradiction. Transcendentally speaking, it's not. It's a mystery. So, if we can associate with Lord Chaitanya's associates, like the Goswamis, hey Radhe, but no, they were seeing Krishna, but they were expressing Where is Krishna? Prabhupada spoke about that regularly. The Goswamis never said, I have seen Krishna. Although they were regularly seeing Krishna. They weren't falsifying their statement. They're expressing their mood of intense desire to see Krishna, to be with Krishna, to participate in Krishna's pastimes. That was their mood in separation. And because of that separation, Krishna satisfied their separation. That balm was applied. That remembrance brought about the feeling of connection with Krishna. But Prabhupada also describes this in Nectar Devotion. Even when there's meeting, there's the intense feeling, very soon Krishna will be gone. Even in meeting.
Tell the story about Premas are all like that. You know?
That
there's actually three kinds of separation. One is called Purvarag, which Rukmini, she's never met Krishna, but she's heard about him. And that's enough. Even in this earth, if all we ever attain is Purvarag, that's... So there's a separation of, you have never met Krishna, but you're anticipating a future of meeting. Then there's a separation of being at a distance. You remember what that's called? I don't know what that has. So you've met, but now they're separated at some distance. And the third is where you're together, but still feeling separation. And the story is that Radha and Krishna were together, and Madha Mangala was also there, and this bumblebee came along and was kind of buzzing around, and Madha Mangala was shooing the bumblebee away, and finally the bumblebee went away, and he says to Radharani, "Oh, Madhusudana is gone." Madhusudana meaning one who destroys honey, meaning a bumblebee. Madhusudana is gone, but that's also a name of Krishna. And she thought, oh, Krishna's gone. Now, Krishna's right there, but she suddenly thought of Krishna's leaving, and she started to feel intense separation, and she started to cry tears that Krishna's gone. She's thinking like this, and Krishna sees that she's in this mood, and he starts thinking he's gone. And he starts crying. And so they both just, copious tears that just flowed endlessly. And so there's this tank, this pond in Vrindavan that's called the Prema Sarova, which was made from their tears of separation while they're both together. So it says that a devotee really aims at intensity of love for Krishna. And so a devotee feels steady, variegated, ever-increasing bliss. It's the Ananda Buddhi Vardhanam, the ocean of bliss is already always increasing. So Krishna and the relationship with the devotees always does in such a way that they feel greater and greater love. And this is satisfying. And because we're dealing with the absolute, there's presence and absence, are ultimately none different, but they're various ways of associating with Krishna. One last thing on this topic. When Krishna did this incredible pastime of jumping in a lake and being grabbed by Kaliyanaga, this water monster, and then he did this thing that he was first in the coils of the snake, and everybody came running to the lake, and there he was, and he said he stayed there, 2 hours, remember?
Hours.
Hours, like this, in this coils of the snake, and Balaram knew what was going on, but all the rest, they were horrified, and he stayed there until Mother Yashoda was on the brink of death. And he said, at that time, the inhabitants of Vrindavan felt their strongest love for Krishna. And then he broke loose and danced on his head. That's what he did. And it's because he He brought that fear for Krishna's life brought out their love to higher and higher. So this is his mercy. Okay, go ahead. He said he had two more though. That would be a chance.
Maybe I'll ask the second one, then you can ask. Third one is for the teaching aspects. I have for the third one. But second one, Maharaj mentioned about Prahlad Maharaj. The mood of Prahlad Maharaj is he wants to stay and take until this compassion, Vaishnava compassion, he wants to stay until all the living entities are not gone back to the spiritual world. And
I would edit it and say he wants to take them with him.
Yeah, okay.
Not as so much he wants to stay. Pause. He wants to take them with him.
And then the other side, devotees, those who are, you know, continuously remembering Krishna, they are in transcendental pleasure. Even Prahlad Maharaj is also transcendental pleasure, but he is in pain of seeing the miseries of the living entities. Well, the devotees, pure devotees, he's also Mahajan and pure devotee, but I feel, you know, what is this? Devotees are very happy if they are in blissful, always remembering Krishna, Chaturtha Kirtanthima. Then, you know, so what is the position of Prahlad Maharaj? He's a mix of, you know, feeling of pleasure.
Prahlad Maharaj, in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Prahlad Maharaj would look at Uddhava as up there. No, we should be very careful and not make comparisons of this Vaishnava, that Vaishnava. Because we can easily get into making offenses by saying this Vaishnava, that Vaishnava. But from Prahlad Maharaj's perspective, Hanuman, you know, he's praying, but Hanuman is serving, and Hanuman is saying, yeah, I'm serving, but then the Pandavas. So Uddhava is at a very, very elevated level. Outside of Vrindavan, Uddhava is the closest to Krishna, the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. So we don't go, oh, Prahlad's way down there, he's not. Their hearts are filled, and their hearts are perfectly pure. There's no taint, but there are degrees. Perfect, more perfect, most perfect. There are degrees of intensity. And that was the point that Ravindra was making. They intensify one's love. First find some, awaken that, and then intensify that. Attraction, shelter, feeling. Prahlad was saying, I don't have a problem. I just think of you. That was his perfection. Vishnu Smaranam. Uddhava's remembering, feeling pain. Because his intensity has been affected by the gopis, by their association. And you know, third canto, we're hearing from Uddhava about his feelings of separation from Krishna. Bhagavatam, you know, doesn't fool around. Takes us quickly. So they're, when you do this thing of comparing, be careful. One, be careful you don't make offense. Be careful. I mean, now in the world as well as from scripture, be careful. And second is, allow that there's variety in this transcendental realm. And you can't so easily compare this to that in the transcendental realm. God is satisfied. He wants those that are unnecessarily suffering due to their attachments, like his father, to temporary things, to let go of those temporary things and attain the eternal. That pains him. But he's satisfied. Holy.
You know, the anxiety that he feels for fallen souls, again, is the perception of a desire that he knows that the Lord has, which is that he wants to have a relationship with every single jiva, and there are some that turn their backs, and so he knows the Lord's desire is this, So again, it's a way of pleasing the Lord. That you, I know you want these people back. This is your desire. Of course, where Krishna really expresses that desire, because to really express his desire to bring back fallen souls, he has to take the form of a devotee, and therefore he appears as Chaitanya. And then, as Chaitanya, that's the form in which he can fully say, because you may remember this extraordinary chapter in Chaitanya Charitamrita where Mahaprabhu is saying, I'm a gardener and I've planted this tree of love of God, and the tree is growing and it's going to produce fruits, and how will I bring them all? How will I bring in this harvest? I need people to help. What can I do by myself? So he expresses this anxiety to bring back the fallen souls when he's in the form of Chaitanya. And that's not a temporary form of the Lord. I mean, his eternal lila. So, and especially as servants of Mahaprabhu, this is how our idea is to bring back. We are not to be selfish that, I'm feeling so much bliss for Krishna, so that's fine, I can forget about everything else. It's not like that. No, what do you want, Krishna? I want that these other people should come back. So we have to take that seriously.
Hey. When Vidura leave the sabha of Dhritarashtra, he says that because his punya karma is diminished, that's why they cannot listen to Krishna and his peace treaty. So my question is, Krishna is right in front of Dhritarashtra, so he doesn't get purified? Like, what is it? Is his consciousness is that much down? That selfishness is. So what about jivas in Kali Yuga? We chant Krishna's name and everything, and still we make a lot of aparadhas, lot of things. So my question is, should we do and how we can understand Krishna in that context?
What should we do, or what should we do to help the Dhritarashtra-like folks in the world?
Yeah.
Second part.
Yeah.
Become more pure. That's what we should do. I'm convinced that's what we should do.
Yeah.
Here's what Krishna did. Krishna tried.
Yeah.
Dhritarashtra's silence said no. It was Duryodhana said no and Dhritarashtra remained silent. That was a no. So Krishna left. Vidura tried.
No.
Duryodhana didn't just say no. He said, drive him out. But he left. He lost everything, but he still was attached to nothing. But, this mental idea of I'm the king. 34 years later, Vidura came back, not just Uncle Vidura or little brother Vidura, but Anuttama Bhagavata through the association with Maitreya and Uddhava. And he moved him.
Yeah, that time.
By purity.
Mm-hmm.
So what can we do? Become pure. Whatever the means,
it
may be this, that, or the other thing. We don't have to leave the palace for 34 years, but by the means for purification, take it.
But another question in that regard, devotees also commit offenses against Krishna, like in attentiveness or whatever, and other things, whatever people do.
Okay.
But how can Krishna turn around that thing?
Yeah. He sends his pure devotee who teaches.
Yeah.
But still there's something we have to do.
Yeah.
It's not passive.
Yeah.
Stop the 10 offenses.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to strive, and by mercy and striving combined, overcome those offenses. And if we can overcome the offenses in chanting, we can overcome all offenses.
Yeah.
Overcome those.
Yeah.
So through association of elevated representatives of Krishna, then it's possible. And for what can we do? We have to become good recipients of that good association and overcome our offenses to Krishna's chanting of the holy name. So let's do some chanting of Krishna's holy name.
Yeah.
Offenselessly striving, at least. We can have our tea?
Yes.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Hi, everyone.